caring for the caregiver, resources, and guidance. The Family Caregiver Alliance estimates there are more than 43 million informal, unpaid caregivers in the United States. These are sons and daughters, parents and loved ones who spend a large part of their time and energy caring for someone who needs them. A new AARP survey shows that many family caregivers feel a great deal of fulfillment, but they also feel great stress and feelings of being overwhelmed. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will talk about the real-world experiences of these caregivers, the changing roles of family members, and resources for those who need help. Where do you turn, and what do you do when you feel you just can't leave the side of your loved one? What have you learned from your experiences? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The good news is that a vast majority of caregivers, 91% according to a recent AARP poll, feel good about the service they provide. The not-so-good news, about half of those caregivers feel stressed or worried, and 40% feel overwhelmed. Today we're going to talk about the work of caregivers and where they can turn for help. In the studio with me, Lori Trenholm. She is Executive Director of the Alzheimer's Association Maine Chapter. Kathleen Fleury is the editor of Down East Magazine. Lori Parham is State Director for AARP Maine. Of course, we want to hear from you. Are you a caregiver? Where do you turn for help? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome back to all three of you. All of you have been on Maine Calling before, though not together, so this is really fun. Lori Trenholm, I want to start with you. Let's start with, who is a caregiver? What is the profile of a caregiver? Is this somebody who's a man, a woman, spouse, children, people who are retired?
So we know the predominant number of caregivers are women. However, we definitely, it's all ages. It's both men and women for sure. More often what we see are men that are care partners or caregivers are reluctant to identify as that. So they kind of go under the radar a little bit. The interesting thing, too, is in around language that we use, spouses in particular don't think of themselves as caregivers. It's just my spouse. So that how we describe people that are providing support to someone can sometimes, they see themselves in that definition, or they might say, oh, that's not me. So it's an interesting point.
So someone who has changed their life, who is leaving their home to go to somebody else's home to care for them, will identify as a caregiver. But someone who's already living with that person, especially as a spouse, will not, and often not reach out for the help that's available, I'm guessing.
That's right. They just look at it like, this is what I'm here to do. This is my family member. It's my mom. It's my dad. It's my wife. It's my husband. So it's an interesting thing that we've learned when we talk about classes and we talk about promoting classes, how we describe who we're trying to reach is very important. The language we use is very important.
All right. Lori Parham, most of us will be a caregiver at some point in our life, won't we?
Yes, we will. And I imagine that many of your listeners today are currently caring for a loved one. In fact, in Maine, approximately 178,000 individuals provide care each year. And we're talking about unpaid caregivers. Those are family members, close friends.
178,000. That's something like 15% of the population any given year.
It's striking. And we've done some research to put a price tag on that care, because these are folks who are giving of themselves time out of their own schedules, often impacting their own livelihood. And roughly the 178,000 individuals here in Maine each year, are that care is worth almost $2.2 billion. And so that's care that individuals are giving that the state isn't having to pay for. And it's a tremendous amount.
All right. Kathleen Fleury, you're here to represent those people who are caring, not necessarily for somebody much older, but somebody younger.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think often we call ourselves mothers and fathers, but we are indeed caregivers. And in our society right now, especially from ages 0 to 6, it can be very difficult and very expensive to find alternatives. So there's a lot of unpaid caregiving happening.
You're the editor of Down East Magazine. Down East is on the forefront of changing your work practices to be more caregiver friendly. Tell me what's happened there.
Well, absolutely. You know, it's a twofold problem. We need policy change, but we also need cultural change in businesses and without. And so at Down East, we now offer 3 months of paid family leave, unlimited sick and vacation time, and flexible work schedules. And what that does, it allows the huge percentage of us that do have some kind of caregiving responsibilities to keep your job and do a great job, but also allow for the challenges within your life. So, for example, it's allowed me to keep working there while having two little kids under six and a third on the way. And that's the kind of change that we need, especially if we want to continue to make workplaces friendly to women. In general, because as they've said, the overwhelming number of caregivers, it does tend to be women.
Let's talk about what people want to think about when they're in the position where they're going to become a caregiver, whether it's as a new parent or maybe your spouse has been diagnosed with dementia. Lori, what do people kind of get naturally? And what are some things people need to think about that often we just don't?
Probably the most important thing to think about is that you can't do this alone. There's a real reluctance to self-identify and say, I need help. And especially with spouses, people view it as a failure if they can't do it alone. And we know with Alzheimer's disease, it's a very isolating disease, and your world gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and you lose some of the connections that you've had over time for various reasons. People may have friendships change or may have adult children move away. So we really advise to connect as much as possible with other people that are in similar circumstances. We offer early stage programming for that very reason. It's one of the best things you can do to meet other people. It's sometimes hard to know who else might be dealing with this because we're still dealing with a stigma around talking about anything to do with brain health. And the more that we talk
really,
about it.
Still?
Oh, absolutely. People will talk about almost anything. But to say that there's something wrong in terms of how their memory is working, in terms of how anything is going on with the brain, it's still that there's still that reluctance.
Interesting. So, Lori, I know that the AARP has an online guide. I mean, this is a guidebook. You're going to be a caregiver. Here's what to think about. Before I started looking into this, I had no idea there was something that tangible for people who would need to be in the position where they're a caregiver. What's on it?
Yes, this is our guidebook called Prepare to Care. And frankly, what we've found over many years is, as we've done research and we've done outreach to caregivers, is that most people don't plan ahead. They don't think about it. And so you get the frantic call, and I'm sure Lori has gotten these at the Alzheimer's Association. My parent had a stroke, or we've just been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. I don't know where to start. Mm. So it's this is a step-by-step guide to prepare yourself, but also to prepare for caring for a loved one if it happens that quickly. Everything from a living will to a healthcare surrogate to finances and expenses to navigating the long-term care system to understanding that Medicare doesn't cover most long-term care costs. It's really skilled nursing stays. So and what's wonderful about it is it's not that big. It's not overwhelming, but it's meant to be a starting point to help people get their head around what it will mean to care for a loved one.
And if one finds themselves in this situation without preparing, and there's so many reasons that could happen from a car accident to a stroke, what are the resources available right away?
So when people contact us, we send them to our Caregiver Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. That helps you navigate your situation. So we try to make sure there are a lot of resources available. We're not a direct service organization. So if we get a call specific to dementia, in all likelihood, we would direct them immediately to the Alzheimer's Association. The area agencies on aging that are across the state and serve the state also have programs set up for caregiving and really help you not only care for a loved one, but another big issue is caregiver burnout and care for yourself. So we get a lot of calls, we get walk-ins, and we spend the time to sit down with folks and help them navigate the starting point for the right path.
Kathleen, what needs to happen to make things better?
From an early childhood perspective, Maine has a lot of work to do. The cost for an infant care, for a year of infant care, is nearly $10,000 in Maine, which actually is more expensive than tuition to the University of Maine. And if you are lucky enough to find infant care, you have to pay $10,000 a year. So you have a lot of families really struggling with how to give care to children, how to work, how to make ends meet, how to find quality care. And honestly, the issue is so interrelated. There's so many different challenges that need to be approached in a holistic way. But, you know, there's some people doing some great work. The Maine Children's Alliance, the Maine Equal Justice Partners, and the Maine Women's Lobby in particular are all working on kind of that holistic view of how to get our children the care they need, and also how to support the caregivers. So there are two challenges with the young age group that we're talking about. Because obviously our society benefits when our children are well taken care of, especially from all the research says from 0 to 3. And that's the most challenging area in Maine right now.
If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I'm going to start with a Facebook post. This is from Jack. He writes, I want to give a huge shout out to A Place to Start and A Place to Gather. My care partner and I are dealing with a whole brain radiation-induced dementia and the loneliness that ensues. I hope people can view their website and their Facebook page, and he's put that on Facebook. Unique, probably in the country, it offers no-cost consultations, services, luncheons, programs, etc. to clients in York County. Motivation nonprofit modeled on Patrick Dempsey's breast cancer initiative. So Jack has posted information about A Place to Start for dementia.org. Lori, that sounds like a pretty incredible program.
That absolutely is. And again, it ties back to the connection and being able to connect to people, being able to meet people and talk in an environment where you know there's understanding. And that's similar to what we do with support groups around the state, the programs that we offer. You don't have to explain what you're dealing with. There's an understanding and an acceptance. And that just makes it a lot easier to access help when it's you feel like the people around you understand. So that's what we hear from caregivers, is that friends and even family are not really as understanding as they might hope, because dementia is a very complex set of symptoms and set of the reality of it can be very, very overwhelming for families and for individuals. And if you've met one person with dementia, you've met one person with dementia. It can look very different person to person. So people get very confused and they second guess and they say, well, maybe it's not that. And so it's amazingly powerful how acceptance and understanding allows you to actually access help.
On the line with us now, Nancy Cincotta from Camp Sunshine. Nancy, did I pronounce your last name properly?
Cincotta.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for calling in. What does Camp Sunshine do for caregivers?
So Camp Sunshine is a retreat for families of children with life-threatening illnesses and bereaved families, and we offer a program that is completely family-based. So the whole family comes to us generally for 5 to 6 days, and we provide a series of support groups, recreational activities, and we really are in a position, it's precisely what you're talking about in the world of dementia and in the other worlds, that people really feel very isolated and lonely when their child is diagnosed, and sometimes even incapable because they don't know the illness and they don't know everything that they need to do. And so they come to this place and they have quite a number of days to feel the support of other people who are going through similar situations and can really understand without having to explain. You know, people don't have to explain themselves. There is a sense among kids of understanding. And it also offers people the opportunity to think about what they're thinking even, right? Like to stop for a little bit. The kids are all in groups and they have a great time. Parents both do fun activities but also have a time to sit and talk and reflect and think about what's going on for them. So, you know, by the end of the week, people leave feeling a sense of connection to a community again, and it's a really wonderful opportunity for them. And it's almost like you kind of both find joy again, which is also one of the dimensions, I think, for caregiving, that people find themselves feeling both burnt out and feeling lonely and feeling unsupported. And it's hard to have fun and feel the joy in life sometimes. And I think our program helps people begin to connect to other people again and to feel some of that satisfaction of through those connections.
Nancy, how many families has Camp Sunshine served since it was founded? Do you know?
Well, we have served over 50,000 family members, and we hope to serve somewhere between 750 and 800 families this year. And we also have a unique component to the program. We have about 2,500 volunteers every year, and the volunteers will tell us that they think that they get more out of the program than they give. And it's really a wonderful blend of bringing people from all walks of life, and we are in Casco, Maine, but we are also open to families coming from around the country. So we bring people from all over in disease-specific sessions, so that if you come and your child has retinoblastoma, which is a type of eye cancer, you know, you can come and meet other people in very, very similar situations. So we have, between the volunteer cohort and the family cohort, we're reaching the lives of many people over the course of a year.
Well, Nancy, thanks so much for calling in. Nancy Sincota, psychosocial director at Camp Sunshine in Casco. Lori Parham, you, AARP, not you, AARP recently did a survey about caregivers with some really striking results. We mentioned one of those results at the top of the program, that 91% of caregivers feel fulfillment from that.
They really do. If you talk to caregivers, and having been a caregiver myself for my grandmother, who is far away and passed early this year, there's some real connection that comes with the closeness that you have when you're dealing with people, especially at the end of life, and the challenges that come with that. And some days are good and some days are bad, but people do really feel fulfilled. I think that, you know, the key is how, and this is one of the things we look at from a policy perspective, is how can we ensure these folks who are feeling fulfilled, but who also are giving so much time and unpaid care, are cared for themselves. And in our long-term care scorecard that rates different policies and practices across states and across the country, that feeling of stress for caregivers was still very high for Maine. And so what are those policies, whether they're economic policies because of the cost of caregiving, especially if you're at a distance, or supportive policies so that you don't feel like you're alone as you're going through the process? And so those are some of the issues that we're working on at both the state level and the federal level.
All right. Go ahead, Kathleen.
Well, I think, you know, all these programs and nonprofits that are offering support are so crucial, but we also need to back up and offer a governmental and policy change so that, especially on short-term basis, we have paid family leave. And right now there's a bill, LD 1587, that got carried over to this session, and it's one of the first times we have a real chance in Maine to pass paid family leave. And that is paid family leave not just for new parents, but for people whose spouses are ill, whose children fall ill. And that is a form of support that is essential, even before all these other wonderful nonprofits help and organizations. We have to value our caregivers by making sure that they have economic security and they won't be fearful of losing their job when a family member falls ill.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. We're discussing caregiving, especially informal family caregiving. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do CEI, helping grow good jobs and sustainable enterprises with financing and business advising services, ceimaine.org, and Dean's Sweets, specializing in hand-dipped truffles, caramels, buttercreams, and other seasonal chocolates in Portland and at deanssweets.com.
30,000 Americans die each year from gunshot wounds. So should gun violence be treated as a public health issue?
That's the approach we should be taking to gun violence research. It should be no different than the approach that we take to cancer, heart disease, or diabetes.
I'm Elise Hugh. How gun violence compares to other public health issues, and what's the best way for the government to address it? This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us for All Things Considered weekday afternoons from 4 to 6:30 on Maine Public Radio. Our newest Maine Public Classical station is officially on the air, WBQA 96.7 FM, Booth Bay, Brunswick. It's joining our other stations in Portland, Bangor, Waterville, Fryeburg-Bridgeton, and Millbridge down east. The strong 96.7 signal serves the coastal areas from Brunswick all the way up to Thomaston and inland to Augusta. However, 96.7 is also available beyond this range, depending on obstructions like hills and your radio's receiver setup. So if you live in areas like Palermo, Liberty, Freedom, Lisbon, you may still be able to pick up 96.7 FM out of Booth Bay. It just might be your connection to Maine Public Classical.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, how to help the caregiver or caregivers in our lives. With me in the studio, Kathleen Fleury, who is editor of Down East Magazine. Lori Parham is the state director for AARP Maine. Lori Trenholm is executive director of the Alzheimer's Association Maine chapter. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now, Representative Drew Gattin. He is serving his third term in the State House and represents Westbrook. Representative Gattin, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me on to talk about this important topic again, Jennifer.
I understand that you helped write and pass the CARE Act just about 2 years ago. It went into effect. Tell us about the measure. What did it do? How is it different from what was happening before?
Well, the CARE Act is something I worked on very closely with AARP and with others in the State House. And again, the CARE Act recognizes, you know, the reality of the very important topic that we're talking about today. Around 200,000 Mainers are helping care for an aged parent or a loved one or a neighbor or a friend. It's a tremendous benefit. It's tremendously important to the people who are delivering the care, and it's a tremendous benefit to our healthcare system. If you were able to put a dollar value on the value of the hours that people are putting in caring for their parents and their neighbors and their friends, it'd be over $2 billion a year. So what the CARE Act does is it recognizes that, and it's really designed to support people so that they can stay in the community and avoid being in the hospital. It's pretty simple, really. What the CARE Act does is it allows a person who is in a hospital or going into a hospital to designate in their hospital record who their family caregiver is. And then when that person is discharged from the hospital, the caregiver is required to be notified so that they can participate in the discharge planning. So it's really designed to make sure that when people are home and they have medical needs, that they're safe and that they're able to get the care that they need. It's a tremendous benefit to Maine's elderly, but also to anybody who is in a hospital and is going to be discharged and is going to need some community support.
True. Before the bill was passed into law, were people just being discharged without anyone to take care of them?
Well, I think a lot of people were getting support, but this really formalized the process. I had a situation a few years ago, where I had broken my leg and I was in the hospital for a couple of days. It had to be surgically repaired. And when the hospital sat down and did the discharge planning with me, I mean, to be honest, I was still, on painkillers and recovering from my surgery. And I was really fortunate to have the wherewithal to make sure that my wife was there to hear the discharge planning and to understand the care that I was going to need when I got home. I was frankly just kind of lucky. So what this does is it really formalizes that process to make sure that when people go home, they're going to be safe and they're going to get the care that they need. Also, again, from a financial perspective, the cost of rehospitalization in our healthcare system is extremely high. And one of the side benefits of this, of course, is that it's going to cut down on expensive rehospitalizations of people who go home and then immediately come back to the hospital.
All right. Well, Representative Drew Gattin, thanks so much for joining us today. Drew Gattin represents Westbrook. He's in his third term, and he's one of the sponsors of the CARE Act. We'll go to Judy from Winterport. Hi, Judy. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you. I wanted to tell people about a course I took from the Eastern Agency on Aging several years ago. I believe they still do it. It was called savvy caregiving for people with dementia. And I think it was 8 weeks once a week. It was extremely helpful in anticipating the stages of dementia, knowing what to do when you got to that stage. And an additional benefit that came from it was that six of us who took the course ended up going to lunch, calling each other, following the progress of each other's significant others, husbands, as the decline continued, and it was an unofficial support group for all of us. I highly recommend it.
Oh, Judy, thanks so much for calling in. Lori, the agencies on aging have all sorts of incredible resources, don't they?
They really do. And caregiving can be, as Lori said, such a lonely experience. And I saw this with my mother-in-law when she was caring for her husband. And you don't have time for friends. And so because of that, you can lose some of those connections. And caregiving support like this was good for her. And you realize you're not alone, that other people are going through the exact same thing. And so we are very fortunate to have the area agencies who offer this support in every region of the state. And they are one of the organizations that we send people to when they call us.
All right, Judy, thanks so much for your call. We'll go to Holly, who's calling from North Conway. Hi, Holly, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi there. Thank you. Good show. Yeah, I have a friend who's a young lady. She has an autistic child. I don't really know if this fits into your conversation, but she's getting some help. But do you guys have any suggestions of where she can go for support for herself, even more so than her child? I'm watching her be very alone. So any suggestions?
Yeah, you know, motherhood in general can be lonely, especially in those early years. And I think when you have additional challenges, it is so isolating and difficult. You know, I would say reach out to the Maine Children's Alliance. They're great people, and they have all kinds of networks within them, and they might be able to help. And then I know now, finally, autism and the spectrum disorders are more talked about. There's less of a stigma. And so there are some informal, you know, support groups and options. I might start, I don't know what the age was, I can't remember, but the public school district also might be able to help. Those are just some, but the Maine Children's Alliance, my guess would point you in the right direction.
Holly, thanks for your call and good luck to your friend. Going to Bill, who's calling from Gorham. Hi, Bill, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call and thanks for the series of shows that you're doing on Alzheimer's and caring for people. It's a tremendous, tremendous need we have. I just wanted to make you aware of a couple of programs that we offer. I'm the owner of Home Instead Senior Care here in Gorham. And one of your previous callers referred to the Savvy Caregiver, which is fabulous training for family caregivers. But some people may find that committing to 6 or 8 weeks worth of training is a little bit much, especially if they can't leave the person they're caring for to go to the training. But we offer free workshops for family members who are dealing with Alzheimer's in their families or related dementias. And they last anywhere from 2 to 4 hours, a one-time thing. It doesn't go into great depth, but it does help people understand a little bit about the disease and how best to cope with the many challenges it presents. And that's open to anybody, not just families of our clients.
Bill, I invite you to put information on our Facebook page about those workshops. That we'll be using that as a resource. I'm sorry I cut you off. What else were you going to say?
Well, there was another program that I'm thinking not many people are aware of, and that's a thing called Hilarity for Charity, which is a program that Seth Rogen and his wife Lauren started a couple of years ago. They raise money. They've raised well over $1 million now to help families who can't afford professional caregivers to come in from outside, who are caring for family members with dementia. And you can go to hilarityforcharity.org and apply for a grant. And they quarterly review for grants and award grants to families who need help. And I think it's a tremendous program that not too many people are aware of.
Bill, thanks for both of those resources. Since I have you on the line, I want to ask you something, though. We're mainly on this program talking about unpaid family caregivers. But my understanding is that in the paid caregiving world, there's a bit of a crisis as well, is that there are not enough people to care for the people who do need that there's a shortage. Is that what you're finding in your work?
Yes, that's definitely true, and it's getting more true as the population ages. Right now, one of the biggest cohorts that we draw on for hiring professional caregivers is the 45 to 65 age range, basically baby boomers or slightly younger. And as they age and need care of themselves, we don't have younger people, as many younger people to draw on. So it really is a big challenge.
You know, to add to that, I've had this experience where we have such great people that work in childcare, and they can't survive on their pay. And I think it was the Bangor Daily News that did a great story about the absolutely atrocious wages of some of these caregivers. So when I say a holistic problem, you know, if the caregivers themselves, if the wages are not high enough to live, you're going to continue to also have the shortage. And I know there was some legislation. I don't have the update on whether it passed or where it is, to try to address the problem of actually caring for the caregivers in the sense of creating an infrastructure that allows them to live on their income.
Bill, thanks so much for your call. We'll move on to Jim, who's calling from Long Island in Casco Bay. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Yes, how are you? I've got a couple of different issues. Sibling disputes over dementia and your parent. I was sued by my brother for guardianship for my parent. He totally denied that she had dementia, and all her friends were saying, Jim, you got to do something about this. So sibling things are something to be addressed when they can be addressed. And two, be careful of attorneys that get in there with their care people, because my mom passed away and they had severance pay for 6 months because she passed away. So there's some funny stuff out there, but the people you're talking to sound like they're really on top of it.
Well, thanks, Jim. Lori Trenholm, do we see this? Do we see dementia and Alzheimer's tear apart families?
Absolutely. It can go either way. We also see families really unite around this. But particularly if a couple has not set into place particular pieces of documentation around powers of attorney and really planning out what their wishes are ahead of time, it can get very, very contentious within families because, as I was talking about before, it's people don't necessarily all accept at the same rate what is actually happening. And maybe in major denial about whether it's Alzheimer's disease or not. And so adult children often are in disagreement with the cognitively intact spouse. And if that spouse is deceased, it can get very challenging. So the sooner, whenever there's a hint or a worry about memory loss or the beginning of mild cognitive impairment, we really stress families how important it is to get to a financial planner, an elder law attorney, and get certain things in place while the person still has capacity to have had a say in those choices. And it's human nature to put some of those things off sometimes, but the sooner they're in place, the better we see relationships go, because this is a very challenging issue, and it's very emotional, and denial is a huge problem.
Jim, thanks so much for your call. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Perhaps you'd like to share a resource that has been helpful to you or some advice. Or if you have a question for our experts here today, please give us a call. We are going to take a quick break, but before we do, a word about tomorrow's program. Join me for a conversation about helping runaways in Maine. Each year, thousands of children Run Away from Home here in Maine. Share your thoughts or questions by emailing talk@mainepublic.org, tweet us, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does the Goldfarb Center for Public Affairs at Colby College, inspiring active citizenship in the world of public affairs.
You thought you were confused by the healthcare debate? This guy runs a giant insurance company.
It's about as complex of an environment as I can recall historically over quite a long period of time.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the CEO of Cigna, and how he's sorting it all out. We'll have the rest of the day's business news as well, of course, next time on Marketplace.
Join us for Marketplace at 6:30 this evening, following All Things Considered. On the next Speaking in Maine, the meaning of public media in foreign countries.
Not only is the language different, but the way of looking at the world is different.
I live in a country in which everything is about politics.
Maine Public Radio's Keith Shortall gathers perspectives from NPR's former Russia correspondent, Corey Flintoff, and Cuban state TV anchor, Christina Escobar. You can hear the discussion on Speaking in Maine, Wednesday afternoon at 2 on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Helping Caregivers. With me in the studio, Lori Parham. She is State Director for AARP Maine. Kathleen Fleury is editor of Down East Magazine. And Lori Trenholm is Executive Director of the Alzheimer's Association Maine chapter. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. I want to talk about a little bit of the legislation that's either here now or on the horizon. And earlier, Kathleen, we were talking about state legislation, LD 1572, which would provide paid 1587, I wrote down the wrong number, paid family leave. But you want to make the point that paid family leave is not what a lot of people presume. It's not just forcing employers to pay people when they're not working.
Yeah, the irony is that that's the perception out there. And what it actually does is it relieves the businesses of the burden, and not in the way people think. A lot of people assume it's just a kind of a bottomless pit of, you know, government subsidies, and it's not. It is actually very similar to unemployment insurance. So it's an insurance program. So people pay in, and then when you need the leave, you get 66% of your salary. In this bill, you get 66% of your salary for 8 weeks if you work at a business of 15 or more. So it doesn't cover everyone currently, this bill, but it is a great leap forward from where we are in Maine right now, which is unpaid for 10 weeks every 2 years.
And bipartisan sponsorship.
It is, yeah. Volk and Representative Volk, and who's a Republican, and Representative Herbig, who is a Democrat, have co-sponsored this. And actually, you'll see across the nation, both Republicans and Democrats support paid leave. And so it's something that it's a rare thing right now that people agree on. So I think we really need to kind of capitalize on that moment. And especially in Maine, people can have an effect on passing this law this winter.
And what about on the national front, Lori Trenholm? What do we see emerging there?
We're really excited by the RAISE Family Caregivers Act. That stands for Recognize, Assist, Include, Support, and Engage Family Caregivers. And that calls on HHS to develop, maintain, and periodically update a national family caregiving strategy, which would include a family caregiving advisory council to advise it on recognizing and supporting family caregivers. So really calling out the issue, really making it front and center. And Senator Collins introduced that legislation along with a separate bill that is entitled Building Our Largest Dementia Infrastructure for Alzheimer's Act. And that's really looking at Alzheimer's as a public health issue, which is a hugely important distinction, that it's at that level. It's of an epidemic level as the population ages. And that's really looking to improve the quality of life for people with dementia, working with physicians, analyzing data, and establishing centers of excellence. So it's really becoming much more of a top level issue. And Senator Collins introduced that legislation as well.
Lori Parham, anything to add?
Sure. Those we're both tracking both of those pieces of legislation as well, and we're very fortunate to have Senator Collins as chair of the Aging Committee working on these issues. We're also tracking closely the Credit for Caring Act, especially as we're talking about tax reform right now. And this would really, I talked earlier about the economic cost for family caregivers, and especially for women who often have to leave the workforce, and we know struggle to keep up with their savings because they've often raised kids as well. And so this would be, the Credit for Caring Act would be a non-refundable federal tax credit of up to $3,000 for family caregivers to help with the financial stress. So if it could cover the cost of a home care aide or adult daycare, home modifications, assistive technology, respite or transportation, all of those services that individuals need if they have dementia or are really struggling with long-term care needs. And so we're really hoping that as we're talking about tax reform for working families, that this Credit for Caring Act will be part of that.
Megan posted on Facebook, "I was my mother's caregiver when she had pancreatic cancer. It was the best thing I've ever done and also the hardest. Challenges for me for financial as I was unable to work. And also the rest of my family who were not acting as main caregiver didn't understand what I was going through." That's what we're hearing. We'll go to Mary calling from Litchfield. Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
Oh, hello. How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
I ended up taking care of my mom. She moved into our home after my father's passing. And I just wanted to stress the planning. My parents planned, and I have five siblings. So even though it was really difficult to talk about it in the beginning, he was able to, through getting a good lawyer and financial advice, so that when he did pass, we had, I had help financially and from my family. I mean, we all knew what was going on. And I also wanted to stress that there are some wonderful agencies in Maine. Spectrum Generation was phenomenal in helping me. The Alzheimer Daycare in Gardner was a lifesaver for me, as I'm self-employed and work at home. So I was able to take my mom there during the day, and just can't stress enough to plan if you feel that something's going on with your parents or with a loved one. That's all I have to say.
Mary, thanks so much for your call.
Mary, can you be our spokesperson? There is a lot you can do. Not everyone can afford, for example, an elder law attorney, but the basic forms now, you can do a lot without spending a fortune to make sure, just to talk to your family. I drive my family nuts because of what I do for a living. I've made sure everybody has paperwork in place. And no one wants to talk about the end of life. But if you wait, and I remember having this conversation with my grandmother, I said to her, if you don't start making some of those decisions, there are going to be people making them for you that you're not going to be happy about. And so the more we can stress planning, the better off it is for the person who needs care, but for the loved ones you're leaving behind.
We'll go to Diana calling from Castine. Hi, Diana. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, Jennifer. How are you? I was just calling in response to the other gentleman who had difficulties with hiring counsel and being somewhat wary. I didn't take offense. I am an attorney, but I'm also a single person caring for my adult son. And planning for his future, his care, is very complex. And I found a national group that addresses many caregiver issues, including a directory of attorneys by state that specialize in elder care and special needs law. And many of the forms and questions that you need answered, they respond. You can email them. They will give you information, direct you to publications on many of the government situations that are available for funding and so on. So I would offer you the website. They have been very, very good in providing me with the information that I needed.
And this is the Special Needs Alliance?
Yes, it's called the Special Needs Alliance, and very simple website, www.specialneedsalliance.org.
Thanks so much for calling in, Diane.
I'm glad you brought that up, too, because I know in Maine there is a gap when you're transitioning from child, special needs child, to an adult with special needs, and we haven't solved that yet. And it can be particularly harrowing for caregivers in that gap. And other states have some great models that I think we need to look at more closely and adopt.
Well, look, we're going to York and Susan. Hi, Susan. Go ahead.
Hi there. Good afternoon. I just quickly wanted to share some information that I was completely unaware of. My dad had suffered with dementia for 2 years. Highly intelligent man, and retrospectively, we think he fooled us for maybe almost 2 years with humor and so forth. And it became known to us that hospice was an available resource towards the end of his sickness. And I found that tremendously helpful. And one of the things that we faced as a family, when my dad was lucid, he was a highly intelligent man, as I said, he did all the right things. Because he knew what was going to be presented with us as far as whenever there's money involved. And I always considered us a very close family. And he did a trust and did a family meeting and was very upfront and forward with what his wishes were, especially with me. I took care of both of my folks. I took care of my mom for 14 years and then my dad. And he also had a debilitating situation because he had one leg shorter than the other, so he started to fall a lot. And he told me in certain terms that when it got to that point, he didn't want to become a burden to anybody or anything, and then that's the time when he wanted hospice involved, which is what we did. Even with that, my whole family, which consists of three brothers, signed documents, understanding clearly, and he had an elder lawyer draw everything up, and they signed the forms, clearly stating that they acknowledged my dad's wishes and et cetera. And even with all the correct things put in place legally and otherwise, it still ended up being an extremely, extremely painful and difficult thing because they challenged a lot of his wishes even after his passing.
When you say they, do you mean your siblings or the hospital or hospice?
My siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that just shocking because you're going through the mourning process and to have that stress as well as though you did something wrong, and I didn't. I fulfilled what his wishes were. And
right.
He had over 30 years of retirement and had a wonderful life thanks to what I did. And I'll be forever proud for giving my life to both of my folks because I never wanted them in a nursing home.
Well, Susan, thank you so much for sharing your story. Lori Trenholm with the Alzheimer's Association nodding as you're telling that. This is unfortunately a story you hear.
Absolutely is. Absolutely is. So having the documents in place and having as much as possible clarified early is so important. But this is a classic case of it isn't always enough. But there's peace of mind in knowing that you did follow the intention of what a parent is or what a spouse's intention was. And so you can't stop siblings from disagreeing and that sort of thing happening, but you can prevent it. You can do a lot to prevent it and not that question of not knowing what was really wanted because the conversation was never had.
And Susan, it seems clear that you do have that peace of mind that you did follow your father's wishes, as difficult as it was. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much for calling in. I think we have time for one more call, so I'm going to go to Deborah in Portland. Deborah, hi, go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much. I worked in the AIDS epidemic with caregivers who were making their panels for the AIDS quilt for about 10 years. And what they went through as caregivers, the shunning, the isolation, even more so than normal. But they entered my heart. And the one piece that I'd like to talk about is the emotion, the fear factor in when somebody is diagnosed and the fear of death. And when I started putting stuff down, the format of a fairy tale came up. And so that it focuses on that your loved one isn't their illness. You know, there's a reason that they're in your life and you love them. And so if I hear someone's life story, I can transform it into a fairy tale. And it's where you're good enough just the way you are and help comes. And it just helps you get back to why you love that person and back to some kind of normalcy in an emotional relationship with them.
Deborah, thanks so much for calling and sharing your strategy. I appreciate that. We have an email here from Bevan. Your program today, the perfect sequel to the excellent presentation on age-friendly communities on Monday. With Maine's rapidly aging population, the need for caregivers will not only be greater, and greater as time goes by, not only unpaid people, but also professionals. What many people don't realize is that all of these issues fit within each other. Aging, caregiving, affordable housing, workforce housing, hospitality care, doctors specializing in older patients, and lots of other issues. We can solve these problems, but it will take input from the public sector, government, and private sources. And this is your message, Kathleen, is it not?
Yeah, you know, I think I think when you look at if the human element doesn't move you, there might be something wrong with you. But if it doesn't, the economic and demographic challenges that this presents should make everyone in Maine sit up and pay attention, because this is all interrelated. And if we don't value caregiving, no matter what age, and we don't create policies and a culture that supports it, we are going to be in trouble here in Maine.
All right. Well, thank you. That was Kathleen Fleury, the editor of Down East Magazine. Lori Trenholm is also here, executive director of the Alzheimer's Association Maine chapter, and Lori Parham, the state director for AARP Maine. Roddy Nickpour ran the board today. You can find past editions of the program and archives at mainecalling.org. Today's program will be on again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, where to turn for help if your child runs away or if you are a teenager seeking help. Also, this program will be for you. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.